You are now listening to MD Femme Podcast. What is MD Femme? It's a community of female doctors. We're all from diverse backgrounds. We've all walked individual paths. And somehow, we've all converged through our pursuit of medicine. And now, we've formed this unique collective in order to provide a safe space to share with one another and support each other. We're not only colleagues, but we're friends. And it's our hope that by being transparent about our personal experiences, we will help other female doctors and our patients share about theirs. The healthcare gap in America that exists for women and people of color can only be closed when we begin to truly listen to one another. We listen. We care. MD Femme.
With the Queer Ampadu. Good evening, and we're going to be talking about cultural diversity and competence. And we're just going to start out with basically, can you let everybody know who's listening and watching where you're from and where you're really from?
All right. Hi, everybody. Like she said, I'm Akuia, or Dr. Ampadu, born and raised in Brooklyn on the same day as Little Kim's birthday. So I ride and die for Little Kim. But my family's originally from Ghana, West Africa. Did my undergrad in Pennsylvania at Penn State. So I'm a Nittany Lion. Then went on to do my medical school at Ohio State. So I'm also a Buckeye. So go 10, Big 10. And then I did my residency training where I met Dr. Scatliff in Newark, at Newark Beth Israel Hospital. So I've kind of been everywhere, and now I am back in the New York City tri-state area.
Well, we welcome you back with open arms. So basically, I have a question for you. Where did you go to school, like all of your schooling? Did you do some there?
So believe it or not, everybody thinks that I schooled in Ghana because of this accent that I have. It's so funny because growing up, people used to always think I was Jamaican. And I'm like, I don't hear a Jamaican accent. People be like, oh, you have an accent. But you know, unfortunately, most non-foreigners believe that if you have an accent, you're automatically from Jamaica. And I'm like, no, my family's from Ghana. And then I honestly don't know where the accent came from. I do think it's a product of my environment, just being around so many Africans growing up. But I did all of my education in Brooklyn, in New York. And then once I hit undergrad college years, then I branched out. But no, everything is here, girl. I'm not an IMG. I'm not an international student. Everything is from the U.S.
Okay. Okay. So just to give everybody a background who's listening, I'm Dr. Scatliff. I'm originally from the British Virgin Islands, Tortola, okay? There are two sets of Virgin Islands, U.S. and British. And I was born and raised there. And basically, I came to the States when I was 19 years old. Went to Florida State University for undergrad. Go Seminoles. And went from there to University of Miami for my grad. Go Canes, and that's a conflict. And left there. And basically went to medical school at Ross University, so I'm an IMG, and then came and met Akuia and Jaina at Newark Beth Israel Medical Center, and did my residency and my fellowship there. So, you know, to kind of like, you know, parallel what you're saying, I was born and raised in the islands, and, you know, I did all my secondary schooling, everything, which is basically high school and everything, was down there. And so I found that when I came here, when I was 19 and I started going to Florida State, I code switched, you know. And for those who don't know what that is, it's basically you mask your real accent with a bland, you know, so they can understand what you're saying, because too many times I don't understand what you're saying, or, you know, oh, where are you from? Where are you really from? You know, and then when it happened too many times, I was just like, that's it. We're just going to code switch from now on. And I never really came back out of it. You know? I noticed that it was so effective. I just continued to do it. And now that I'm, you know, in my career, I'm wondering, you know, is there still a benefit to code switching? What do you think?
So kind of like you, I think my quote unquote code switching even began around probably medical school. Again, I'm from Brooklyn. I talk a certain way. People from Brooklyn talk a certain way, you know, but kind of like what you're saying, I noticed that people either didn't understand me or they automatically said, okay, where are you from? They didn't assume, they all assumed that you weren't American. And then when you tell them, no, I might be even more American than you, they're very surprised. Now in this day and age, I do recognize that code switching may still be important, and it is something that I still often do, especially as I travel to different places for work. Given maybe my East Coast background, a lot of times people may judge you, or they may not respect what you're saying, respect your opinion in the hospital. So sometimes you do have to change not just your accent, but also your vernacular, the words that you say. Sometimes you have to change it so that people, unfortunately, may respect you or respect the advice or whatever it is that you're discussing with them.
Right. So here's my question to you, because I feel very similar to you. And I feel like our patients sometimes feel that way too. Like, let's say, you know, your patient comes in to see you and they're from a different place, you know, and I've seen it happen and you've seen it happen throughout our careers. Let's say they're Caribbean descent or they're African descent and they have an accent. Here comes a preconceived notion about who they are and their experiences and their education level. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you find your patients are even trying to code switch because they get treated differently when they speak in their accent or, you know, what they're going through. So, what do you think about, do you think that it's reinforcing a negative, like, stereotype? Like, is it by code switching, are we saying it's okay for you to have your preconceived notions about us?
That's a very good question. And I would unfortunately have to say yes, because it perpetuates the stereotype that, oh, if you're, quote unquote, a foreigner, you're not as educated, or you may not know or understand things as much. So you will find that a lot of people, once it could be physicians, it could be anybody, once the patient has an accent or may say, hey, I'm from Indonesia or wherever, that they may talk so quickly that it goes over the person's head, or they may try to dumb something down so that they feel that the patient can understand. So yeah, unfortunately, it is almost a cycle that can be a bit difficult to break. I'm not too sure how we can break it. Well, actually, no. I think the best way to break it is cultural competency. Cultural competency and education for all healthcare providers, where they learn to respect, understand, and honor the differences amongst people and amongst patients and the people that they may be working with.
Right. Now, let me ask you a question. What do you think is the most effective way for hospitals and institutions to get their staff to be more culturally competent? Because, you know, they have sessions within hospitals. Like, we went through that in residency, right? They have a mandatory lecture that you have to go to. And unfortunately, it's not a very diverse individual that's giving it. Mm-hmm. Or if they're giving it, no one is paying attention to what's being said, right? Yeah. And even within the lecture, there's a lot of generalized blanket statements that don't fit everybody. Like, not all Caribbean people are from Jamaica or Trinidad. I just want to say that.
Yes.
When you hear an accent, it's not always those islands. Yes, those are the biggest islands. But, you know, and the population from there is huge in the U.S. And we have love for them. But it's also very insensitive to assume that everybody comes from there, as if, you know, I've heard an African accent and say, oh, they're automatically Ghanaian or Nigerian. That's horrible. Yeah, exactly. It's horrible. And, you know, one of the things that I feel like I went through, not only in medical school, but in college, like I told you, was when they heard I was from an island, they were like, well, you know, how do you like the U.S.? Isn't it so much better than, you know, where you can? And I'm like, what do you think? Do you not understand that we're modernized and you have to deal with this, the terminology that I absolutely hate, third world country?
Mm-hmm.
And
I prefer concept, developing.
Exactly. Developing nation yes. is a much more yeah. accurate, number one. And number two, it's, you know, there it comes with a stigma. They think that, you know, we don't have access to the same things that they do, but we do. You know, we have this, we have access to education, we have access to the same things. So you make these assumptions about people based on their where they're from and their cultures, and you're completely erroneous. And so the cycle continues. So, like, it goes back to what we were saying about code switching. Like, how effective is code switching? Like, I even feel like right now I'm in a place in my career where I should come out of it just for this point. You know, here I am. I'm Dr. Scatliff. I'm, you know, I'm a pulmonary critical care physician. I've written, I've published, I've this, I've that. I'm obviously educated. And then you hear my island accent. It should dispel some myths, but unfortunately, yeah. I think it will cause the reverse. You know, so that's just one of the things that, you know, I know. I read this article from, can't remember where, I'm gonna get in trouble. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say where, but it was about when Serena Williams went to the hospital, her experience.
Okay.
Just talking about, like, you know, she is not feeling right, and people were not listening to her.
Okay.
Like, how much of them not listening to her was about what she looked like or what she sounded like? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So,
and I was like, if she was, you know, someone else, I was, yeah. you know, would they have heard what she was going through? And, you know, a lot of patients say that they feel like they're treated differently because of the way that they speak. What do you think hospitals should do or institutions should do to kind of help out with that?
Like you said, a lot of these lectures and these modules that you have to do online, you just do it so that you can click the box that you've done it. I would say they can probably take it a step further. If you recall, when you were in medical school, you did OSCEs, which were kind of clinical vignette with volunteer patients. People pretended to be patients
right.
in clinical settings. I think maybe integrating OSCEs into hospital education, where people have to go, you know, maybe take a day of training and have these clinical scenarios with fake patients. It could be a Bangladesh male. It can be a Chinese woman. It can be a El Salvadorian woman with a baby who can't speak English, you know, and they go through different clinical vignettes, and then we have to see how you react. And then afterwards, you know, you get feedback.
Right.
I actually think OSCEs may be the way to go, because once you have that scenario, that situation, it's more likely to stick than reading and going through a module.
Right, right. That might actually be instead of having a passive learning experience, having an active exchange might actually concrete some things in. Yeah. The other thing that, you know, they talk about with cultural diversity is your name. So your name is not what you guys, and my name is, okay? And do you think there's a difference, especially in the medical world, like with our credentials and so forth, do you think that people look at names still when they look at resumes and CVs and so forth? Do you think that that has an effect on the jobs we get as physicians?
Oh, that's a very good question. Actually, I would say no, for the simple fact that I think now in the U.S. they have so many foreign physicians now that it's almost expected that you're going to get a Patel or Chernowski or, right. you know, Oluwatemi, something. You're going to get a foreign doctor maybe 45 to 65% of the time. And I think, honestly, that's the way that the health system is going here, especially with all the trials and tribulations and the difficulties of getting into medical school. You know, a lot more foreign grads will be entering, which is a good thing, because I think we need their help because there is a shortage of physicians.
Right.
Now, I do also want to say that somewhere like New York, Miami, Chicago, Los Angeles, even places, Georgia, Texas, I think they're more inept and comfortable with hiring physicians who are foreigners because the population is more foreign. Now, when you go to places like maybe, and I'm not stereotyping, or I'm not just picking on one place, maybe say West Virginia, Idaho, Wyoming. I think those places, because the population is so uniform, there may be a little bit of difficulty in those areas. And I mean, the articles have already been written and they've shown that, you know, places where there it's mostly a Caucasian population, maybe an older population, when you have foreign physicians come in and female physicians, you find it that there may be a lot of tension with the patients. You know, they may not respond as well. There's a lot of racism, there's a lot of sexism and that sort. So I think it really depends on your location within the U.S.
Right. I can attest to that personally, working in the South and encountering, you know, the ones that are very verbal are my Caucasian males, okay? And they don't want you. They don't want you. They make it very known that they do not want a Black female doctor. and not in a very polite way either. But you know, changing people's conceptions is one thing. But you in the healthcare industry and being a physician and so forth, we learn how to temper, you know, those situations. We learn how to avenue those things. Mike, my other question for you is something that's an interesting statistic that I saw. Okay, so they brought up that race has 3.5 times negative impact, okay, on career progression than gender. Okay, so already they compared that male physicians, female physicians, females are paid 26.5% less than their counterparts. But now they're saying that race has 3.5 times more negative impact than just the gender alone. So if we even compare ourselves to our white female counterparts, saying that we're being paid less than them even. So what do you say to a young Black woman or a young woman of color that wants to get into medicine? How do you encourage her in a climate like this?
I will say that it's good to know the numbers. It's good to know the facts. Even myself, I didn't know those specific numbers, but I did know that there is some type of not only gender, but also racial inequality. I would say that education is key, that you shouldn't allow the salary or lack of salary to defer you from this great career, this great profession. I would say that you should know what you're getting yourself into, and you should ask for comparison. One thing I always say is that a lot of physicians, especially female physicians, are nervous about asking about salaries, what other people are making, especially when you come to the drawing board when it comes to speaking with recruiters or hospitals before you sign a contract. I think we should have the gall to be able to say, okay, well, what is the average salary here? What are the male physicians getting? Somebody who has the same experience as me, what is the average that they're making, you know? And I don't think that that's something that should be hidden by the hospital or the facility. Once you know those numbers, then you can come back maybe with a lawyer or maybe by yourself and be able to argue whatever salary that they're offering you.
Okay, that's great advice. Another question I have for you is,
okay,
as a Black female physician, and we've gone through this through residency and so forth, and now we're in our careers, how do you deal with the microaggressions?
Mm.
Not so obvious, but obvious to us.
Yes.
The statements and so forth, the behaviors. How do you approach those microaggressions in the workplace?
It's tough. It's tough. And it can be painful. Because you say to yourself, okay, will anybody ever look at me beyond my skin color or beyond this accent that I have, you know, or even beyond my age? Because there's also ageism that you notice in the healthcare industry. And I think the best way that you can counteract it is to have confidence. You know, sometimes you'll go into a new facility or somewhere and the nursing staff or whoever who's been there for 25 years may try to test you. You know, but once, if you're confident in your knowledge, if you're confident in your decision making, most times they are more comfortable and less likely to do those things. You do have to grow a thick skin.
Yes.
You know? And I think that anybody should be prepared for that if you plan on practicing here in the United States, possibly Europe, any type of land where you are not the majority. You have to have a thick skin and be confident in yourself and your skills and the gift and the plan that God has for your life. You know, if you're supposed to be a doctor helping people and saving people, nothing's going to stop you from doing that.
That's great advice. I'm going to speak from my personal experiences.
Yes.
In residency and fellowship. Mm. I feel like I started out with confidence. I did. Mm-hmm. And then I went through a series of situations and circumstances that completely depleted my confidence.
Yeah, I remember.
And coming from that place and rebuilding that through my career, I'm going to give a couple suggestions. The first things first is always speak clearly and, you know, with respect and yes. with kindness. Okay?
Yes. Yes.
Never take offense to someone questioning, you know, what you're doing. Just always pause and try to explain. It's an opportunity to educate. That's yes. what I say. Okay. The second thing too is to understand that we work in healthcare, you cannot work by yourself. It is an yes. interdisciplinary team. Okay. So we have our nurses and our mid levels and the physicians and everybody. And yes, you may have people are people, right? Not all people are going to work well together. We're going to have our own preconceived notions and ideas and things that are going to cause things to be harder than they need to be. Okay. But if we take a pause and we realize we're doing this for our patient, you know, we can still give effective care with effective communication.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I agree.
Last but not least, never let what someone does outside of you change who you are. Okay.
Love that.
Their reaction or how they behave should never change who you are, never change your nature. And I found myself becoming aggressive and defensive because I allowed other people's actions to dictate who I was. Okay. And I was like, these people, they know all the time when I went through these different situations, it was always a situation of someone on the fray, someone on the outskirts. It wasn't even someone I was directly talking to or had a direct interaction with. It was never that individual. It was always someone who was on the outside looking in. Okay. And I learned from that point on that whenever there was a situation or anything and everybody's in the room, I would be like, everybody pause.
Yes.
Identify who I am, speak clearly and calmly. And I looked at everyone in the room. I find that now doing that, interconnecting with everybody and kind of forming that rapport, that kind of pushes away those situations. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is understanding that not everybody's going to be on your team. Okay. If you are a woman of color in medicine, not everybody's going to be on your team, okay? And that is okay. As long as you operate from a place of kindness and from confidence, like you said, and also from I'm doing what's best for my patient, then you should be fine with your actions.
Yeah.
If you can go to sleep at night and know I did everything that I could do for that patient and I advocated for my patient, then you should be unapologetic.
Yeah,
okay. You always respect your peers. You always try to show kindness. People will step outside of the gate and they will test you, but never let someone's actions change who you are. And I feel like that was something I had to learn through residency and through fellowship. And even, you know, in the early part of my career right now, I'm still learning it. And I feel like I'm a better communicator. And when things come up, I go, well, let's talk about this. And I feel like, you know, I feel like people look at me and say, you know, they have a preconceived notion because I'm a bigger woman, right? I'm 5'7", right? And I'm a strong woman. And I do not smile at baseline. Okay. And so they look at me, right? And I think they think that I'm, you know, a different personality. And then once you get to know me, you're like, oh, Dr. Scatliff, you know? And I'm like, Just give me a chance. That's my only thing. Just give me a chance. Just give me a chance. Just give me a chance. But yeah, for all those who are still like in medical school or you're thinking about going to medical school, do not let these things deter you. If you really want it, then you go for it.
That's okay? Right.
We did not get into medicine for money.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
And we did not get into medicine for oh, this is going to be an easy path. No, no. And the more that you go through it, you will realize that while it is challenging, it is rewarding. So, yes. You know, it's worth it. So anything else to close? Or
no, I think you actually hit everything on the mark. And like you said, what I really liked about what you said is, you know, always present with kindness. Somebody may be giving you the biggest headache or stress, or you know that this person for some odd reason does not like you and is trying to make your work so difficult. Maybe because you're a woman, maybe because you're Black, it could be anything. Maybe because you're young, maybe because you're beautiful, it could be anything, you know, but always respond with kindness and respect. You always hear the adage, kill them with kindness. And it's so true. It's so true. So I agree 100% with what you're saying, you know, and cultural competency, code switching and all those things, it's going to have to be continuous conversations. I don't think there's one answer to them, but I think that everybody has to try to do their due diligence and try to do something to make an impact, not just for us, but for the residents and the physicians that will be coming in after us.
Right. So on that note, I'm going to close with something I heard from Luvi Ajay. I don't know if you know that lady. She's a Nigerian author. She did this book called I'm Judging You, The Do Better Manual. And she's also like a digital strategist. And she spoke about being the first domino, inspiring others to change the narrative, even in the difficult situations, in order to change a culture. And our conversation, we inspire you to be a domino also. This has been Akuya Ampadu and Kristen Scatliff for MD Fam.
We at MD Fam thank you for tuning into our podcast and blog. We are real, we are honest, and we are candid about the topics that affect all of us. We hope that our dialogue will dispel myths, change culture, and rewrite the narrative. Please visit us on Instagram and Facebook and our website, mdfem.com. If you have questions or a topic you would like us to address, please don't hesitate to reach out to us through our social media, website, and email. We listen, we care. MD Fem.